Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Coming up on Man Enough. What are we doing in our lives to prevent our embracing of that we are one day going to come to an end, and how do we feel about that? I feel excited about it. I mean, I'm not.
About dying?
I had a near-death experience yesterday.
Yeah, what happened?
It just happened. I'm flying from New York to Los Angeles. No one knows what's going on. But we know it's something serious. It's not just like we need to refuel. Then I've got my phone and I'm looking at photos of my family. I'm praying. Is this the end?
Being man enough, what does that mean?
It's really manly to mess up, admit you're wrong, and then grow.
I couldn't accept that I was evil. So maybe I'm broken, but those broken things could be corrected.
Intimacy between a father and a son is me just wanting to like put my head in your lap.
I love you, son.
You haven't called me benevolent sexist, but my experience is women are better.
Even if it's a positive, it's still not equality.
I don't blame men for that. I just blame the system.
This
is
Man Enough.
Hey, everybody. You are with me and Liz on the Man Enough podcast.
It is us.
Welcome back. Oh my gosh, Liz. Well, it's been a minute since we had a little hiatus. I'm not sure where this is going to fit in our sequence of new stuff, but for us, it's our first day.
Yeah, our first day back, first day of school.
Without Justin.
I know.
We're getting so used to being without him.
We are. He's always here in presence.
He is indeed. Maybe we'll just ring him at some point and say hello. But he's, so everyone knows, we finished up one of our movies and now he's post and editing and, that's important at the moment. And you all are important. And so Liz and I are here to hold the fort down and talk about what's going out in the world and how we feel about it. Talk about aging? Is that what we're talking about?
I think we will.
For me, look, this is the truth. So I've got Just for Men on. So that's dye. So that the grays and the blacks are a little bit more evened out.
Okay, got it.
If I didn't use it at all, it probably wouldn't be fully white. No, it would not be. It's not. I'm not to that age. But it's, you know, it shows up. So I use that.
Yeah.
One of the ways to like present younger. I feel, I'll just start this off by saying that we are in this place now where we make old a bad thing.
Yeah.
Aging, like we're less than. So we want to hold on to our youth. I understand we want to look good and all that stuff. But at what point did we determine that getting older is not beautiful, is not wonderful? And I'm talking about physically, because that's obviously these things help us with our physical appearance.
Yeah.
When did that happen? Has that always been the case? Are kids nowadays going like, I don't want to look older because then I lose my value?
Yeah.
Does that mean? I don't know.
It's different, I think, for every person, but I also think it differs per gender a little bit, right? There's obviously age is something that we've, again, in our culture and in other cultures, it's something amazing and elderly people are revered. But in our culture, it's like something you want to hide, right? Something you want to prevent. Or even, we have these tools or this technology to, like, think that we can actually stop it. And all these billionaire guys. It's hacking, body hacking. Is that what it's called? They're literally trying to hack their bodies to age less quickly. Do you feel your age?
I don't know what I feel. I'm certainly—my wife's 15 years younger than me. Been married 10 years. I got two kids that are 7 and 6. I have my 34-year-old and a 21-year-old from previous marriage. So I'm still engaged in a way that oftentimes people at 54 are not, having young ones, having a wife that's also, she's 38. So I don't even know what that means anymore.
Yeah.
I enjoy getting older. I'm a little smarter. My body hurts a little bit more when I wake up. Can't jump as high. Can't run as fast. Whatever those things are. But do I experience what it is like to be older? I do not. I know it's coming. I keep wondering, like, when is that going to come? Obviously, I think about it enough that I put dye in my face. Not my hair. Like, you know, my beard. Like, obviously, it's something there.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's any different about that than brushing
hair. What if you had white hair? What would that Because I have little whites come up and I freak out.
Yeah.
And the idea that I wouldn't, I don't have to, I'm not at the point where I'm going to dye my whole hair, but it's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
And actually I was on this date and this guy was like, you should just, why not? Like, right. Why would you dye it? And I'm like, oh, in my head, I'm not supposed to have white hair. I'm not of the age yet. I haven't achieved
It's worse for you, Liz, than it is for me.
Yeah.
When I was 37 or 40 and starting to sing, because men, when we get older and gray up or whatever it is, get some wrinkles, we're distinguished and we're dependable.
Mm-hmm.
Or something of that nature, right? You don't see us as boys, you see us as men. When a woman starts to get older, there's this whole stigma attached to it that I know you have to live with. Mm-hmm. So it makes more sense to me that a woman would dye her hair or Botox or do these things, plastic surgery, more than a man does because of the pressures that are on you to look a certain, to look youthful and all that.
Right.
I get it. It's unfortunate. I hate that for you. But it plagues us as well.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Mad Enough Podcast. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Welcome back to the Mad Enough Podcast. I think as we get older and approaching death, our own like end of our days and lives, are we doing everything we can to not get there? What is our association with ending, the ending of our lives? The younger that I look, then I'm farther away from that island that eventually is my demise or my birth, depending upon how you look at it. And I wonder if we live in a culture now, and not to push religion on anybody or anything, but at a point when there was a lot of people had a connection to God and were more religious, did they have a perspective of an afterlife that wasn't as fearful as maybe it is now, who people don't have these conversations or don't have a religious or a spiritual practice that allows them to believe in it, that they're not afraid of it. So they're not like preventing, like, how do I stay away from that at all? Age, how do I look? Making sure my body's in shape. We should be in shape, of course. It's better for our health. But what are we doing in our lives to prevent our embracing of that we are one day going to come to an end, and how do we feel about that? I feel excited about it. I mean, I'm not—
About dying?
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Really?
I don't want to get there. I'm not like trying to like, I had a near-death experience yesterday. Not a near-death, but I had an experience yesterday that made me wonder if I would be coming to my end. And I don't want to get there yet. I'd like to see my kids and all the stuff and experience life a little longer. Let me give you the quick snapshot.
Yeah, what happened?
It just happened. So I did not have a near-death, but I had a mental near-death. Essentially, I'm flying from New York to Los Angeles, take a flight that leaves at 6 in the morning, about an hour and a half into the flight. The very jovial flight attendant becomes very serious. I'm giving you the quick version. Tells everybody to sit down, very stern voice. I had gotten up to go to the bathroom just before this, and he basically yells at me and tells me, get out of here, go to the back bathroom now. And from this person that was very light on their feet and wonderful, got very serious, went to the bathroom. I come out, I see flight attendants walking up and down the aisle, very serious. Then he comes on the line and says, we have a situation. We're landing the plane immediately. Doesn't tell us why. Tells anyone that if they stand up, they'll be held accountable, whatever the heck that means. He's very stern. One person got up to, I guess, get something out of there. And he says, yeah, do not touch the bin. Sit down right now. Sit down right now. Do not touch that bin. And then his voice is getting loud. Everyone's now getting intense. So for about 30 minutes until we land, no one knows what's going on, but we know it's something serious. It's not just like we need to refuel.
Right.
You know. So we land. 30 minutes of people speculating, worry. Then we get on the ground, and then we end up driving to an isolated part of the— – it's like just a field of cement.
Oh, my God.
Nowhere, just an open parking lot. And then greeted by hundreds of law enforcement and bomb squad and dogs and robots and
robots?
And, yeah. Robots going up. I didn't see the robot right at first until later. And then the captain comes on and says that somebody had written on the mirror in the lavatory something of the words of, there is an active bomb, or I have a bomb on the plane, or something of that nature, in like lipstick or marker or something of that nature. So that they take seriously.
Yeah.
Is it serious? Is it not? So here's what happens. I don't know by the, this was an 8-hour experience from the time this all happened. And most of it was fine the last 4 or 5 hours once we're off the plane. But when we landed, we were stuck in this plane for about another hour, an hour and a half of waiting to exit without them really approaching it, assessing what to do, whatever the protocol is. And those of us who now have learned that someone has said there's a bomb on the plane, people are starting to wonder, is this real?
Right.
And then the longer you're there and you see all this law enforcement around you, start preparing for an explosion.
Oh.
And then during that time, and then I've got my phone and I'm looking at photos of my family. I'm praying. I'm trying to calm some other people down and like let them know we're going to be fine. Do I believe this or not? You look in the back of the
plane. I would want you in the plane if I was getting hijacked.
And for that period of time, you realize like I'm on a plane, that there's a bomb threat, that we had to land, and I'm surrounded by law enforcement. And you're like, is this the end? Like, is this, especially while we were on the ground not knowing anything and you know it's serious, is there a hostage situation? Are we being hijacked? Is there, what? No one knows what's going on.
Oh my God.
So during that period, there was about a 2-hour period where there was fear, hope and belief, acceptance. And when you start looking at, and I'm like, why am I looking at my family photos right now? It's because you're like, is this the last? And now that it's over, I'm like, okay, it was fine. You know, I didn't end up with any bruises or scratches. Emotionally, there was some stuff. And,
yeah.
I didn't really have time to process it until I got home. And I was like, holy shit, I was on a plane that was grounded because there was potentially a bomb on there. And we were around law enforcement. And then all that comes with that. So that actually got me thinking about mortality. And this is why earlier when I was saying, like, I'm comfortable with death, like, I was not scared like some other people were. I didn't have this fear of like, holy shit, I'm dying. It was a fear of this unknown for sure. And I don't want to be exploded on.
All right.
But I wasn't afraid of my death. Mortality is a weird thing because I really believe in this, the idea of the next world and its blissfulness. But it was real. Like it felt tangible. Mm. There's been 2 times that's, you know, another time I had a gun in my head and some people thought they were going to kill me.
What?
And yeah, this is a whole other thing. This is like some years ago.
How can you drop that? Just
And so there's 2 times that I've experienced where I thought I could be dying right here, right now, that are real. And what does that mean? Like, how can I behave? What does that mean to my, I also thought for a minute, oh, I better show up and be like strong and help other people, which goes to like, am I trying to be masculine here or am I just being helpful? Is this ego driven? Am I wanting to be some hero, savior? That was not that. I just wanted to
be of service. And it probably helps
also,
you.
And also distract me from my own mind and brain. But yeah, that happened.
Wowza.
No, getting older.
I mean, more things happen.
The more you live,
well,
I guess the more times that you have a chance of getting bit by a shark, I guess.
Right. But that's what they say. I mean, that you should live your life like you could. Yeah, you could die at any time. I mean, it is true, but we don't think about it, right? We don't think about mortality in that way. And I think we would appreciate life a lot more if we did.
Yeah. And then you come home and you see your wife and like make out with her, where she's like, and here's the thing. Oh. Before I left, I was only gone for 2 days. We had bumped heads and it was a little bit, we were fine, but we were like on a 70 versus like a 95, you know, in terms of joy and excitement with each other, but we were fine. And we hadn't really resolved it, but we were fine. But I came in and I just started making out with her.
Oh.
And then she says, wait, we haven't resolved. Like, we're still like, we haven't really connected. I was like, yeah, I know. I need to make out with you. And then she, you know, then just we just had a moment of like, because you realize in that moment, what happens if you don't see someone again? So I guess the moral of the story for me is make out with my wife as much as possible.
There we go.
The end.
That's, yeah. Your word of
as
advice.
A form of love, showing her like, you know, love, not like because to serve needs. That's stupid and shallow, but to be connected. You know?
Yeah. That's great. I mean, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
But if you told me that I had a month left or 2 months or 6 months, yeah, I don't want it, but I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah.
I do believe like the next life is better than this one.
Mm-hmm.
And as joyful and wonderful and less of the pain and all that other stuff. So I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah. You know what I think I have?
Besides beauty and
wonder. Oh, thank you. No, but like, I don't feel bad about aging. I think it's a luxury and it's a privilege, but I don't feel the age that I'm supposed to be. Like, I feel like I have this like millennial imposter syndrome that a lot of people in my generation have.
You don't feel the age you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't, like, when I'm like, my parents had me at 35. My mom had me at 35, and I'm about to turn 37. And I'm like, how was that the body? Like how was my mom 37 and I was – like, that just feels – it's totally different and a completely different reality from sort of my own. I don't own a house. I'm not married. I don't have kids, obviously. There are a lot of things that I guess I associate with being that age that are not – that are kind of not unavailable to me, but harder to achieve. And so I feel like I shouldn't be 37. I feel like there's a mistake. Like,
that you should be what, 27?
Yeah, 100%. 27 makes sense to me with where I'm at in my life and my level of, yeah.
I don't know. The young kids nowadays, I mean, what's happening? Everybody is getting Botox at 25 years old.
I mean, not everybody, but it's much. I remember being at a dinner in my late 20s with not a group of people that are particularly superficial or, you know, it was all women and media and a lot of feminist media, actually. And all of a sudden, it was just going, they started talking about Botox and around the table. I was the only person that just hadn't done it. And it was very normalized. It was and it freaked me out. Honestly, I and then they talked about it being, preventative.
Yeah.
And they talked about fillers that had gone wrong and getting them fixed. And I just, it kind of blew my mind. But then that normalized it for me. Even that, after that dinner, I started seeing it as much more normal. And so I think our standard has really shifted.
I used to think when I would see people with Botox, because in my mind, that meant like huge, crazy looking lips and you looked nuts and all that stuff. It looks so clearly like, what are they doing? Right. And I have changed my thinking. I don't have the judgment that I used to, because I started thinking, well, we brush our teeth. We go to the dentist. We make sure our teeth are young, not young looking, but are functioning in a way. We all do our hair. We get haircuts so we can look good. We put our clothes on. We put on our whatever that is. So why would I have a judgment for something that also is another extension of that?
Yeah.
Putting the health risks aside, you know, assuming that it's just fine to do. So I don't have an issue with it like I used to before.
Yeah. Well, it's also like one of the things. So one of the things that people keep talking about online is that Gen Z are aging so much more quick, like too quickly, or like they look older than other generations. Like, so a lot of people are talking about it in regards to like Kylie Jenner, that she's young. What is she, 25, 26? And she, you know, obviously has gotten a lot of different surgeries. A lot of the Kardashians, or all of them probably have. And, but she, it makes her look significantly older, right? And so
not necessarily old. You just mean older than what she is.
Well, older than what she is, right? That I think there's an, again, doing Botox or doing, you know, surgery on your face, I think used to be or was associated with like a woman or a person of a certain age, but because people are doing it much younger, it actually can make them look, you know, sort of even older. But
that makes sense.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know. I feel the same way that you do, where I don't want to judge anybody for wanting to, and again, particularly women for wanting to be young and wanting to preserve that because it's very valuable in our society. And I do it, right? But I kind of hate that I do it. It's right. It's sort of all internalized. And I have a lot of respect for women who don't do anything. And even again, coming back to sort of the gendered lens on it, I think that there are certain things that you want to accomplish by a certain age, right? And I think for men and women, those things are, you know, sort of similar, but can be also different. Again, I'm going to be 37, and there's something about that number of like not being, you know, that also is tied to reproductive. Like after 35, it's like there's this cutoff. And I think for men, it's also being financially stable and being financially in a place where like you can buy a home and offer that kind of security if you're heterosexual to your partner, to a woman.
So tell me about that. Tell me about, because I do believe, I have a lot of friends that are turning 40 when I turn 40. For most of us, it feels like, oh, we've arrived. I'm 40.
Okay.
Now I'm really considered a man. I'm taking seriously in all aspects. I'm still young enough to do all the things, but I'm revered for being wise or something of that nature. So that feels like an arrival. For women who turn 40, it feels like I'm a has-been. I'm not that you are, I'm not suggesting, but the world states that you're no longer, okay, you're not in your prime to have babies. You have wrinkles now and the other things that happen, you don't look youthful, all the stuff that men seem to chase after the 22-year-old young such and such. So is that, do you think that plays a part in our genders? For me, 40 years old is like, I've arrived. For a woman at 40 years old, it's like, oh shit.
Well, what's funny is that every woman I talked to who is in her 40s was like, 40 is the best. Like the thing that they don't tell you is, I have a friend, Glynis, who actually wrote an entire book that was called No One Tells You This, and it was about turning 40 and her being like upset that everyone sort of lied and sort of led her to believe that this was going to be the end when it's actually the beginning. And I do feel, I mean, as much as I, you know, I'm stressed out about my birthday, I love being in my 30s. I'm so happy, so much happier than I was in my 20s. Like I feel like I have arrived in a really significant way, and I would never go back to it.
You have that when you were 25? When I was 25, I was not afraid of being 30, 32, other than just like, oh my gosh, I'm older. But there was nothing that felt like, oh, that feels daunting. How am I going to be viewed? Now that you're 37, okay, you embrace who you are and you're excited looking back. But when you were 25, 27, 28, was there a fear of turning 30? Was there a fear of turning 35? Is there a fear of turning 40 because of what society says about you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I noticed, in turning 30 was people aren't that impressed with you. You know, you're in your 20s, no matter what you do, people are like, oh, wow, and you're only 26. You've already done so much and you're just this age. And when you're 31, it's like, they'll still say, wow, that's great, but they're not like, oh, and you're only 32. Like, that's not going to happen.
I know that well.
I know. But at the same time, I mean, the advice I give to, because, you know, when people, I think especially with women, ask me about this, I'm like, your 20s are, this like skyrocketing kind of, or anyway, for me in my life, it was just trying so many things. I mean, I moved to the States. I was doing all these things that were, you know, kind of nuts and new and different and throwing a lot of spaghetti on the wall. And then 30s is when like you settle and like things don't go as quickly. It's not the same graph, but it's like a different graph that's more gratifying, no pun intended, where it's a slower growth, but it's like you're settling into your expertise and into who you are. And then I think at 40 is when like then you're a G, like you're at the top of your game and whatever you're, I mean, that's my prediction that I like to tell myself.
You're pretty much at the top of your game now.
Thanks.
And continue moving and smart and brilliant. But I hear you. As a musician growing up, when I was 12, 14, 15, 21 in the studio producing people, it's like, oh my God, this genius kid. You're so incredible. Like, oh my gosh.
You're a genius.
And you get to like 30, it was like, oh, this dude's pretty good. Now I do the same thing. People are like, okay, big deal. Like, all right, you're no big deal. And it's the same talent. But obviously, so as we get older, you're kind of expected to be what you are. And when you're younger, you're not. So I get that.
There's a renaissance, though, in your life. I mean, you took on a totally different career path and role.
Not completely totally different because it's still in the entertainment world. My whole life has been entertainment and in this.
Different.
But certainly in the music world and now in the film world. But they're married.
Agree with that, but I think it's very impressive.
As someone who doesn't both, I can tell you that it's not that big of a shift as much as you might think.
I mean, it's still a very different, anyway, I saw your evolution start from the day I met you when we started this podcast to now. I mean, it's incredible.
You're listening to the Mad Enough Podcast. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Mad Enough Podcast.
What do you think, like, what would you have wanted to know in your 20s or in your 30s? What, like, for men who are in their 30s who have, because we should do a thing. I saw this woman doing it on TikTok, actually. It's like men under 30 ask a question, men over 30 answer them. What do you think is, like, a question that you would have needed, or like something you would have needed to know in your 30s?
Well, just from what you said, you're saying people under 30 would ask questions over 30 had
answered them.
Answer
them, yeah.
It's opposite for me, though.
Oh, interesting.
I've learned as I'm getting older that I don't know as much as I think I know.
Yeah.
I love it when I hear people say, I don't know. it's a turn on. It's not a sexual turn on, like a an emotional, spiritual turn on when I see someone that I revere very much and who's could have all the answers, and they say, I don't know. And they ask questions. And when I was 30, I think oftentimes we're trying to prove ourselves, trying to make sure that people know that we belong in the room. Mm-hmm. So I would actually think it's opposite. The older that we get, oftentimes we may have the answers, but we ask because we're in a learning, you know, a posture of learning versus.
Right.
But do I think that's prevalent within males? Yeah, I suppose we get older and we think we know more, so then we answer stuff. But
you don't ask each other as many questions, I think.
As we get older?
No, men don't. I think
women.
We
just generally don't do that.
Yes, exactly. I think women, there's more of a, again, men mentor each other, obviously. But I think with women, there's more of a, we're more comfortable, you know, admitting that we don't know how to do something or that we might, you know.
I think men too, to be honest, because I think our egos, when we're younger, our egos really, we need all those things and we need to express ourselves. When we get older, we realize, all right, I'm not all that. Not as much as I thought I used to be. There's a lot of people now that I know that are even more brilliant. Like, you're stupid if you can't acknowledge that or see that. So you become a bit more humble. Mm-hmm. I do think even the 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, as we get older, the ones that still have a lot of gravitas and pump their chest, even them, I bet you they pump their chest less than they did when they were 30.
Oh, yeah. So your ego.
Your ego starts to get, like, tame.
Okay.
You know, you've had some. The end of your life is coming. You know, you see your mortality. So all of a sudden, I just think generally our egos.
Right.
Unless you're, I don't talk about like people that are in the public eye and constantly being told you're brilliant, you're wonderful. All the people that we deal with in our industry, you know, constantly being told, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're wonderful. You're so smart. So Liz, tell me something that you have experienced that has been tough for you over the last few months. As it pertains to our general topic.
Yeah. I mean, I had some health issues last year, actually. It's not super sexy, but it did suck real bad. But it also...
Ones that you can share or no?
I basically got long COVID. Yeah. I didn't know what was going on. And now I know a lot about it. And so, if anyone's listening and you have like weird symptoms, do bring it up to your doctor. They might help you understand what's going on. But yeah, so I just was like, couldn't do anything. My thyroid stopped working. Like a lot of things, just like I was getting infections. Like my body just stopped making white blood cells. It was kind of nuts. So I was sick a lot, and again, it's such a cliche because when you're in it, you're like, make this go away right now. But now that I look back, I made a lot of changes in my life that are really, really positive as a result of it. Mm. It's so easy to, for me anyways, or I spent so much time in my life ignoring my body. It almost was like a religion for me of just powering through. Mm. And I became really good at it that I didn't even know what I was sort of feeling. I know Justin has brought this up a lot with a lot of the somatic stuff that he's been doing. But I started being like physically aware of who was bad for me and who was good for me in terms of friendships and just people in general.
Oh, okay.
So I got like a really good ticker from my body kind of being not in the best shape. It gave me like a really good, sort of barometer of sorts. Barometer. French Canadian comes
barometer.
Out.
Barometer.
So weird.
Were you saying barometer?
I was saying barometer.
Barometer.
Leave it in. but it became like a barometer for a lot of my decisions. And then what's going on in the world has been affecting me a lot. It's been hard for me to like. We are in World War III. Like we know that, right? I feel like we don't.
We don't say
really
that.
Say that, and we realize, it. And you know,
we're not in the typical. We don't say that because we oftentimes think world wars are just army versus army on the ground fighting, whatever that looks like.
Totally,
but really, the world war that we are experiencing is extends beyond that.
Yeah, and they didn't know during World War II. They weren't like, this is World War II. Like, it's always kind of after. So I'm struggling or being challenged in terms of how to. take all of that in and sort of what's going on in the world and still be able to do the mundane, banal kind of stuff that you need to do in your life. And that also has challenged relationships and made me, but again, a lot of growth of just having really good boundaries and respect, like self-respect, honestly, if there's a situation or a relationship that's not working.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of
relationships.
Yeah. We're back to relationships.
It all comes back down.
Comes back.
You know what you said there? I'm going to make a quick point.
You want just an update on fun dating stories, and I just gave you.
I want that. You know what's interesting, Liz? I oftentimes will hear somebody speak about something, and will say, in this day and age, especially now, what's going on in the world, all things that are valid. Do you know that if you go back 10 years ago and hear someone talk, they'll say, in this day and age, you know, especially now, you go back 20 years ago and you hear someone talk about something that's an advocate for growth and of humanity, especially in this day and age. I mean, you see what's going on in the world, and you go back 50 years before that. Every generation says, especially in this day and age. This period that we're going through now, I don't know if it's that much different than what was going on 20 years ago. It's different, but not different for the time that they were in and seeing the world crumbling and building and crumbling and building. So we are in our version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of trying to eliminate especially now in this day and age. I mean, every age we have to continue to grow and to be better and to keep advancing humanity and work through stuff. And I think it demonstrates that we've never arrived. In 20 years from now, our kids or our nieces and nephews will be saying the same exact thing. It's this day and age. Do you see the planet? Do you see what's going on there? Mm-hmm. Look how gender is this. Look how whatever it may be. Yeah. The same conversation.
We all think we're special.
We all think that what we're dealing with is so special, and it is for our time, but it's all part of the same process, which is an ever-advancing civilization that we are a part of, and we must do our part to move that ball.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's a thought.
Do you think there's an over-focus on do you think it's almost a form of not narcissism, but sort of self-involvement that
self-involvement,
we think,
narcissism.
Oh, this is so hard. Like, but because to me that's helpful, and maybe because I'm a flaming narcissist, but to me that's helpful to acknowledge because I go, oh right, that's why things are not easy, you know, or I'm struggling, or there's a lot of cognitive dissonance that I'm not able to sort of do, but do you think that it sort of makes us focus more on what's wrong and think
I think what we're dealing with now more than any here I go again more than any other time, I do think what's prevalent now is victim narcissism versus just narcissism, right? Narcissism that you think that you're the center of the world and you're wonderful and all that. It's not so much that. It's that you think the world's against you, that everything is happening to you versus the other narcissists that think they're the gift to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that, this victim narcissism, is incredibly damaging to one's growth, to the ability to move through things, to see things soberly and reflect in it with an eye that allows you to not just make it about you. Something happens, you're driving down the street, a car comes in. Well, sometimes cars just come in and bump you, but someone else is like, why did that car try to bump me? What is it about me? Mm. People are trying to take me down. I'm so important to the point that things are against me. I think that's really prevalent.
And when did that start and why did it, where is that from?
I don't know where it's from. I do know that we are in a social media period of time when everyone has access to each other, which is wonderful. But also, I think there's this connection that we have. If you think I'm being wronged, then there's an attention that comes with it. And I think so many people are posting things of this nature and talking about it, and then we come to each other's aid and we get support for being wronged versus support for doing good, for being like joyful and the things that we're doing. I don't know. I think that there's some connection there.
Well, there's really interesting data about, which I see myself in this data, just about how younger generations are actually less tolerant than older generations, which doesn't ever happen. Usually,
younger generations.
Yeah, younger generations are usually, it's the reverse. The younger you are, the more tolerant you are. But it's like there's less of a tolerance for discomfort with younger people. And again, I say with myself that I think in a pre-2016 world, I think I had more tolerance for different opinions and for being friends with people who, you know, had different opinions. And then something kind of shifted where to a little bit to your point of social media became like bad to be associated or right that you're part of the problem and you're, you know, which again, there's definitely truth to all of that. But it, I think, created this culture where I've noticed it, like I'll be on a date or something and they'll say something that I don't agree with. And then I like this red light goes on in my, and I'm like, well, I can't be with a person who believes that, you know, and I project probably a million other things onto them that I'm not even realizing I'm doing. And I'm closing myself off to, you know, a potential relationship that, that could be great based on this, this inability to kind of just tolerate it and be like, okay, we disagree. That's great. Like disagreement is great. We should in a democracy. That's a very healthy thing. You know where they don't disagree, like North Korea. Yeah. So we view it as, again, like this like danger when it's actually like a positive thing.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Liz, we haven't had a discussion of this nature in a little bit.
Yeah.
And why do we keep doing it? Are we going to end? Is it ever going to come a time when we don't need to discuss this? I think the answer is no. I think having discussions, I mean, this is a bit of adjacent. We're not talking directly about man enough, masculinity, and, you know, how the world is impacted by its wonderful qualities and maybe some of its qualities that don't serve humanity great. But there's so many things around this topic that are important. Like, we've never arrived. I keep saying that. Yeah. Humanity's never arrived. The whole point is to keep evolving and evolving. And so long as that's happening, there'll be a need to have conversations and unpack things, be honest and be vulnerable. Talk about age, for instance, is one. Talk about death. Talk about Botox. Talk about the things that make us feel complete and whole and what separates us from each other. So I'm glad that we're still doing it and that we will continue to have conversations and, you know, do it without Justin. I don't mean that. Justin, I love you.
Me too. I'm so glad we're back.
We're back.
I woke up this morning like Christmas Day. I was like, yay.
No, I haven't seen you.
Jamie and everyone.
I know. And you look every bit of
37.
I think you look every bit of not 37 and every bit of 37. Because I don't know.
What is it?
For some reason, like we say like, oh, you look 37. Like you don't look 37. What is 37 supposed to look like?
I know.
Why would you not want to look 37? Right. I want to look healthy.
Right.
Be healthy, generally speaking. And you can still look 60 and still look healthy. Not if you're comparing it to a 30-year-old, because our bodies and skin look different over that time. So I think you look wonderfully and perfectly, beautifully 37. That can pass for 27. And it...
I did have a 25-year-old guy hit on me the other day. I was like, wow. This, and he was like, you're 30. Like, he, you know. So I think I still got it.
I had a 45-year-old man hit on me.
Oh, that's nice.
For the whole night, just kept telling me how handsome I was.
You are.
Which I was, whether it's true or not, he kept telling me over and over again. And then he told my wife how handsome I was. And I went up to my wife, I was like, I think he's hitting on me. She was like, oh yeah, he keeps telling me how beautiful you are. And I was like, oh, snap.
Being hit on by a gay guy is better than being hit on by a woman, I think.
For me, it's
gay men have great taste.
Hey. And for me, it's great because I'm not tempted to, since I'm
right. There's no
since
threat.
I'm not gay. Yeah. There's no threat for me. You know, whereas a woman hits on me of that nature, and look, I'm human. Do you double take? Do you triple take? Do you find yourself in a terrible situation that you wouldn't have otherwise? So it's much safer. So
great. So gay men
hit on me all the time.
Go for
it. Great.
Yeah. On the both of us, I love it. I like when gay men compliment. I'm like, this is. A gay man and the elderly are my demo. If they like what I'm wearing, I've done it.
Speaking of aging, I can't see
you. Oh, you have glasses now.
Wait, what?
This is so apropos.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me with your glasses on?
I don't need them in general.
Okay.
I don't wear them other than when I'm driving or watching a movie. I started noticing like, hey, is that in focus? Do you notice? Is that perfectly in focus? And then my wife would be like, oh, it looks fine. I'm like, no, it's a little bit. And then... got my eyes checked. They're like, you have a slight, you're getting older. So then I put them on. It was like, oh, it's HD. So I wear them when I drive and when I watch a movie half the time.
Yeah. It's a new thing I'm experiencing where you go to the doctor and you're like, something's wrong. And they're like, no, that's what your eyes do now. That's what your body is. Because I couldn't see at night very well. And I got panicked that I had this. Well, I diagnosed myself with a degenerative eye disease, obviously.
Of course.
And so then I went to this eye doctor, and she was like, "No, that's just what it is now. That's how you see." Like, You're just getting old.
So with that, join us for future episodes. We are happy to be back and share with you manenough.com/podcast to share with you. Let's see, you can find us on Spotify and all the places and YouTube, and you can see her pretty 37-year-old, 27-year-old face.
37, 30,
you can see my glasses.
They look cool.
Hey, and until then.
Yeah.
We are.
Liz Plank.
And Jamie Heath.
And this is
Man Enough.
Thank you for listening to the Man Enough podcast, produced by Wayfair Studios. Hosted by Justin Baldoni, Liz Plank, and me, Jamie Heath. If you like what you heard, please follow us and tune in weekly as we undefine masculinity and learn in real time. Justin Baldoni, Jamie Heath, and Tara Malhotra-Feinberg from Wayfair Studios are our executive producers. Miriam Debbie Talbot is our producer. Ashmi Elizabeth Dang is head of marketing. Brianna Panwasi is our social media manager. And Susie Landers O'Connell is our lead editor. Thanks for listening.